what we believe about the Bible is based on what we believe about its source.
The God Who Speaks, the award-winning documentary from the American Family Association, is now available in a special limited edition DVD set. This release includes a Sunday school curriculum and 2 hours of additional footage. Go to thegodwhospeaks.org to get your copy today. thegodwhospeaks.org. Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association.
Hey, good morning, everybody, and welcome to the radio program Today's Issues here on American Family Radio. Today's Monday, January the 13th, 2025. We hope you had a good weekend. And joining me in studio is Ed Vitagliano. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, Tim.
And Fred Jackson. Good morning, Fred.
Good morning, Tim.
Gentlemen, a lot to talk about today that's happened even since last Friday. The offices in our studios were closed on Friday. We had a Mississippi version of a, quote, winter blizzard, end quote. No, it was, what, 3 inches of snow or something? Yeah, it did fall pretty fast Friday and closed our offices.
It did, and I think there was probably 3 inches in my yard.
Yeah, but it melted. It's gone.
Yes.
It melted quick.
Now, it was very cold
in
Mississippi, so you had to kind of wait for the sun to come out on Saturday for it to start to melt. But
I don't think people in Iowa right now are buying it, but we're doing our best here. Now, it was a winter storm that hit the south, and it did drop a lot of snow and ice on people on Thursday and Friday. You can't have rednecks driving on the roads. In the 3 inches of snow. You don't want to see that.
No.
You know, you talk about canceling insurance.
Yes.
We'd have a lot of insurances canceled because that happened. So anyway, listen, we hope everybody had a nice weekend, but that's the reason the offices and studios were closed on Friday. We didn't have our Trivia Friday show. But, all right, today we got a lot of stuff happening in our country. First and foremost, Fred, is what's happening in the Los Angeles area.
Yeah, as we're sitting here in this studio, we have various networks, pictures from various TV networks, and they're all talking about California. Because, you know, it's a beautiful sunny day. We're seeing those kinds of weathers, but we continue to see these pictures of the devastation caused by these wildfires. And now what the breaking news this morning is, they're afraid of another round of high winds tomorrow, winds of up to 70 miles an hour. Now, the problem is, you may think, well, they've had, you know, several days to work on watering down the ashes from the original wildfires, that sort of thing. That's not true. It's been very, very dry, and they didn't get to all the hot spots yet. So now there's concerns for some of the areas that were not hit in the first wave. They are in danger, and they're trying as best as possible. There are evacuation orders that are still in place from the original wildfires. So it is a tough, tough time. I'm sure we've all seen interviews with people, what they're going through out there. The death toll over the weekend climbed to 24. And that's 24 confirmed. They also know there are some people missing. They haven't been, including some children. So this is an ongoing story. The danger is not over yet, and we need to be praying for these dear folks because this is going to continue.
And I saw one graphic up here again. As Tim said, we're watching in the studio. We have four network feeds, 12,000 plus homes and businesses. Now we were talking in our story meeting.
You mean destroyed?
Destroyed. Yeah, by the fires. We were talking about in our business meeting, you know, I hadn't really thought much about the businesses until we were talking this morning.
Yeah.
So there are people who have lost their homes and their belongings and a lot of their personal items, photos and all that sort of thing. And then there are others who may have lost a home and their livelihood.
Yeah.
Because there's a great deal of question, how many of these people are going to be able to rebuild? Can they afford to rebuild? And so this is, we're talking about families' lives completely wiped out, even if they personally have survived the fires.
Not only that, consider, I mean, you got your own personal home. Then, as you say, maybe a business is completely destroyed. Then you have to think about things like churches.
Yeah.
Schools. You know, everything's wiped out. Everything's gone. You know, when a tornado hits a town, people say the town got wiped out. Well, what, 100 homes were destroyed. Okay. And that's a tragedy. And that makes national news for days on end. Hurricane, same situation. We see what happened with the flooding from the last hurricane in particular. Here you have a natural disaster, if that's what it was. Now, natural disaster, by that I mean we know that the winds, created the, and the dryness created the climate for what happened. Well, we don't know how that fire started exactly and may never know.
No.
But at this point, you have how many thousands?
12,000 structures.
Yeah, okay. Homes and businesses.
Gone.
Yeah.
Gone.
So, right.
Yeah.
Gone. So I was reading last night about the insurance companies.
Mm-hmm.
Well, a lot of insurance companies pulled out of California altogether because of previous wildfires.
That's right.
In the especially in the greater Los Angeles area, which is the most populated part of California, so in there in Orange County and other counties, Southern California, and they pulled out because of the risk was too high for their companies. So now I'm thinking they're not going to have insurance at a lot. Well, a lot of people don't have insurance on these homes that were destroyed.
Yeah.
Now, I don't. Okay, without living there and knowing and having my roots there, it's easy for me to say what I'm about to say. I don't mean it to sound callous or uncaring, but just a straight up business decision. If I'm a homeowner and I can't get insurance for my home, I bet I'm just going to have to say that it's at risk and I know it, and I'm not going to do anything to change the situation. It's just going to be at risk, okay? Because otherwise you have to say, well, that's irresponsible. You're going to live in a house that you know is not insured in a risky area, and then when the fires burn it down, you're going to complain about something. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense?
Well,
do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I kind of. I you're talking about people who have no choice. Or are you saying they do have
choice? Yeah. Okay. What I read was this. Well, they have no choice because it's too expensive.
Right. Right.
Okay. And then they're stuck.
Yes.
Okay. So that's.
Because they can't sell it because nobody else can buy it because they can't get insurance either.
So that's not exactly like saying, I'm not going to buy insurance because I don't care and I'll take.
Right.
I'll roll the dice. That's not the same thing. A lot of these folks who live in these homes that have been destroyed, they did have house insurance, fire and property. I mean, but what happened was, so let's say you pay a insurance company 25 years to insure your home, all right? Well, then the insurance company says, you know, we're pulling out of California effective next year. And then, so you've had it, you've paid for it.
Right.
But now it's not available to you.
Yes.
Any longer. So that's, I guess, an unfortunate circumstance that's no fault of anybody's. Is that clear?
Yeah. That
clears it up. So because that's what a lot of people are facing.
Even if you own a home, a lot of these homes are in expensive areas too. So even if you own it, I guess Fred, I see what you have to say about this too. Even if you own it, in other words, you've paid it off.
Right.
And if you can't insure it, you're still rolling the dice.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you don't have to continue paying a mortgage on it, but you're still rolling the dice by not getting insurance. And if you can't get insurance, like Tim said, you are stuck.
Yeah, because how are you going to sell it? You're going to sell it to somebody who say, and they say, well, you can buy my house for $200,000-$300,000 or whatever. But guess what? You can't get house insurance.
Yeah, and you can't. My understanding is all banks and mortgage companies, you cannot purchase a home and make payments if you don't have insurance.
If you don't have insurance.
You can pay cash.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So a lot of these folks did have insurance, but then they didn't because it wasn't available to them. Now, if it got, quote, too expensive, that's another consideration. I don't know. Here's the problem is that a lot of these folks have lived here for decades.
Yeah.
This is their home. This is this is where they raised their families.
Mm-hmm.
I was listening to James Woods,
the actor.
He was talking about he had lived there like 40 years or something like that, or something like that. And Billy Crystal, the actor, he had lived in his home there for like same thing, raised his whole. His daughter's there, the actor I'm talking about. Speaking of which, I think this would be appropriate time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'll tell you what we're going to do right there. We're going to play a lengthy interview with the actor Dennis Quaid. I'll set this up, okay, because this is like 4 minutes, and we never play a four-minute clip here. But I saw it on, I think, YouTube or something like that. Or one of the news services, and I thought this is a very interesting interview, and I think our listeners might like to hear it. Dennis Quaid, of course, everybody knows who he is. His latest film, Reagan, I saw a couple of months ago, was outstanding. It was The Life of Ronald Reagan. Anyway, so the situation is this. He's leaving his home last night or the night before, and he's putting things in his car, and this reporter shows up and wants to do an interview with him. Now, personally, I thought this is an inappropriate time to ask for an interview when a man's trying to flee his home, okay? Now, it wasn't fleeing it as in you can see his house is on fire. It wasn't that imminent. But it was still, he was heeding the evacuation warnings put out by officials there in Southern California. So what you're about to hear is a reporter. I don't even know which station. He was with a local Los Angeles
NBC station.
Mm-hmm. And he's Dennis Quaid was a nice person to even do this interview because most people would have told him, I'm not doing an interview because I'm busy, okay, with this situation.
Yeah, and what's wrong with you?
Yes,
the reporter.
Yes. What's wrong with you, Mr. Reporter? Of course, reporters are sent out to do interviews, so they're going to ask, they're going to try to get it, and sometimes they seem rude and pushy in trying to do so. So that's the situation, and we'll play this and let folks listen to this interview. Again, I don't know if it took place last night or the night before when the exact interview took place, but here it is.
You got the Quaid smile still working.
Well, what are you going to do?
Well, right. Tell me, what is it? First of all, what is exactly going on here? What are you doing?
You know, Tuesday, we woke up to this big plume of smoke, and then that was a real exciting day. And as far as here and Palisades went up, and Wednesday, it came within 150 yards of the house, and these guys with their planes came down and put that retardant down there, and those helicopter pilots they're incredible. What they do, and I can't say enough about the firefighters and the first responders in this town. We got some good ones, just good people here, and we're fighting as hard as we can to save our city. Gosh, I never thought I'd say that, but that's what's going on.
When you were forced to get out, how quick was it for Dennis Quaid?
Well, We were on the very edge of the first evacuation zone, which, you know, that was the Palisades fire. And so we've had it lucky. I have so many friends who've lost. My agent, he lost both of his houses. another good friend over the Palisades. He just moved into a house and he was renting the other one. And he lost both of them. I mean, what do you do? I mean, just to rebuild, you start to think about how long it takes to put a house together, and then you can't really hold it in your mind. I think that's a thing that kind of keeps us sane a little bit. It's kind of a blessing to not have to think about all of that stuff.
So you took off, right?
Yeah.
Explain to me what's going on right
now. Well, I was at the house. I got my wife and kids to the hotel and stuff, and I came back just in case, you know, had shut off the gas and all those little things you don't think of, and just thought maybe I can be there and put a hose on a roof if the embers start coming over, at least something like that, or help out the neighbors. And so I was there till dark on Wednesday, and I thought we were through it, but you know, because they stopped it right then and there, and the winds died down. But hopefully tomorrow they'll have this thing laid down enough that it, because if it takes out Mandeville, it could take out Brentwood. It, you know, just come roaring down here.
To get your head around that, when you're hearing this in January, a fire that's already taken out the Palisades.
Who would have thought? Who would have thought? You know, we've all had a really big lesson.
What is it?
And that our experience of reality can change in a moment. You know, and that's something that we just have to let God handle. You know, I think there's a spiritual awakening on the other side of this, because it's going to make us all a little wiser and more compassionate.
You know, you brought up something about, you know, we've talked a lot of the people in the entertainment business live in this area, agents and directors and actors such as yourself. There will be a moment, Dennis, where Hollywood is going to need to respond, to rebuild this area and to come together. This is going to be, you know, a clarion call for you and for your community, for Hollywood to step up.
Well,
and are you confident that will happen?
For Hollywood and all the businesses, the dry cleaners, the grocery stores, you know, the gardeners that work in this area, all the construction workers, you know, your convenience store, your gas station, it's all of us. We're all Hollywood, if you want to say that.
Okay, that's actor Dennis Quaid. I don't know when that interview was, Fred. It was the last few days.
Mm-hmm.
But, well, you know, when you're looking at pictures and what he's talking about there, it is just hard to imagine. I mean, all these places burned down, one after another. I mean, street after street after street, neighborhood after neighborhood. Where do you even start to think about rebuilding? I mean, first of all, it's going to take them about 2 years to clean everything out. And what do you do with all that debris?
You know? Yeah, because you got to bring in bulldozers and trucks, right. And you got to, you know, people are going to have to be allowed to go back and sift through, see if they can recover anything that might have survived.
Right.
My understanding is they were warning people not to return just yet, because some of the materials that burned produce dangerous chemicals, plastics and so forth. So
the toxic fumes.
Toxic
everywhere.
Fumes. So that's, you know, so that's just the initial start of the process. Then people got to decide, do people get insurance? Do they have insurance? Are you going to have empty lots because people might own the lot but can't afford to rebuild? I mean, this, like you said, this could take years. And in, like some places, they got destroyed by hurricanes on the Gulf Coast. I'm not sure that some of these small communities will ever come back.
You know, we had the advantage of being able to watch this interview, the reporter walking up, and you see a figure off on the right-hand side of the screen, and we find out it's Dennis Quaid. But what struck me, you know, Dennis Quaid and others who live in that area, multimillionaires.
Right.
But there was Dennis Quaid stuffing clothes into a garbage bag.
Yeah.
And throwing it into a trunk. And I thought, that's what he has to do.
Just like everybody else.
Just like everybody else. He, you know, his life is now reduced to putting clothes in a garbage bag.
Yeah.
And trying to get it to somewhere where his wife and his two kids are.
Said they were in a hotel, didn't he?
Yeah. They were in a hotel. So it was, you know, this kind of thing in going through this kind of neighborhood, it's the great equalizer.
Yeah. It was interesting that he was talking about the people who own the businesses that help Hollywood do what it does.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, dry cleaners and restaurants and gas stations, convenience stores. He was at least demonstrating some concern about them too.
Yeah.
Because those people's lives have changed too, even if they don't live in a nice neighborhood like Dennis Quaid was talking about.
Well, there's the immediate. I mean, okay, some can afford to stay in a hotel for a long time.
Yeah.
But others can't. Mm-mm. I mean, where are we going to go? And, and we have no income.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What are we going to do?
And so some of these people, and I think Dennis Quaid mentioned it too, he was talking about some of the Hollywood people he knew had more than one home.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them had both homes burn up.
Yeah.
And even if you had a second home somewhere else, you at least can go live there.
Yeah.
But a lot of the people that he was talking about, there's no possibility of folks like that. If you work at a restaurant, mm-hmm. you don't own two homes.
No.
So you're gonna have to go somewhere. You're gonna have to go move in with family or move somewhere. You think about 12,000 homes and businesses destroyed by this fire. That's a lot of hotel rooms.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Rental property that drives up prices. There's a scarcity of rental property after something like this happens. So that drives up the prices. And so the average person and below in terms of income, they're not going to be able to afford it. Do they leave California altogether? That's what these kinds of disasters.
Yeah. Let me
problems. They
you know,
create.
What you don't think about too, something that you think about related to everything we were discussing here. And that is, you know, what do you do now, you know, and that is, I'm thinking there are probably a lot of people who are going to say, I'm not, you know, I don't have 5 years to dedicate to try to figure out how to rebuild.
Yeah.
And even if I do, would the insurance companies even, because I can't afford for another house to burn down again.
Right.
What's to say this is not going to happen again in 5 years because of the weather conditions? Again, I think they had said 6 months without rain. Mm-hmm. Did y'all read that
right.
too?
Yeah. Yeah.
6 months without rain. When they say it never rains in Southern California, there's some truth to that.
Right.
And so the rain is very dry, and then the winds come in, the Santa Ana winds. Those Santa Ana winds have been around since God created Earth.
Right.
Okay, they're not going to stop. So, and they've had to deal with wildfires in the past, and they've been able to, while it's done a lot of damage, they've been able to put them out because they had.
A lot of it's been forest fires.
Right.
This is mowing down whole communities.
Right. So I'm thinking to myself, a lot of people are going to say, you know what? We're just moving on. We're going to have to go somewhere else and start over.
That's what they did after Katrina in 2005,
right.
Hurricane Katrina in New Orleans.
Yes.
That's one of the reasons why we got
Abraham Hamilton. Right.
Because he had to move to Houston.
Right.
And was working there.
Right.
I think that's where he met his wife, Maria.
It's, I don't ever remember anything like this in my lifetime. Do you guys remember anything like this?
With no.
This many people affected?
No, not by
and complete and utter devastation.
Right. And it's not done yet.
No.
Possibly.
No, the winds are picking back up as 75 mile an hour winds expected, I guess, today. I don't know
next
how long
24 hours, yeah.
That'll last, but there are still some fires that have not been.
Not and been. It can create new fires. We all know you blow on embers.
Right.
You can and get flames again.
And you got 75 mile an hour winds, you know, those embers jump.
Yeah.
A long way. And then so we'll be back momentarily with more of today's issues on the American Family Radio Network.
If we learned anything from this election, it's how important it is for us to fight, fight, fight. We also learned how desperately the left wants to fight to take babies' lives, which is why every day Preborn Ministries fights for the babies. Preborn's network of clinics are positioned in the highest abortion areas, fighting for mothers deciding between the life and death of their child. Preborn welcomes these women with God's love and offers them a free ultrasound to introduce their precious baby and hear the beautiful heartbeat. This amazing encounter gives her baby a fighting chance, and the majority of the time, she will choose life. Would you join Preborn in the fight for life? One ultrasound is just $28, and $140 will sponsor five ultrasounds. And now, through a match, your gift is doubled. Babies are worth fighting for. To donate, dial #250 on your cell and say the keyword baby. That's #250, baby, or visit preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR. All gifts are tax deductible, and Preborn has a 4-star charity rating. Fight, fight, fight for the babies.
This is today's issues. Email your comments to comments@AFR.net. Past broadcasts of today's issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at AFR.net. Now, back to more of today's issues.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to today's issues. That's the name of this program on the American Family Radio Network. I'm Tim with Ed and Fred. Thank you for listening. We basically spent the first half hour talking about what's happening in Los Angeles and the greater Los Angeles area with the fires that are wreaking havoc on big swaths of the city and beyond. I don't know where the city stops and where you know, but it's the greater Los Angeles area. But we were talking about the fact that, you know, after this is all over, whenever it ends, and it might start again today with these winds picking up. I'm talking about out of control fires. Who's going to insure homes there anymore? You know? So it's a bad situation for.
Yeah, I'm looking at a map. So the Malibu, Pacific Palisades area looks like it's to the west, kind of a little bit, maybe northwest. The Hearst fire is kind of to the northwest, and the Eaton fire to the north of Los Angeles.
Right.
So I don't know where the winds would come drive from these things.
Yeah.
Whether it would go to Los Angeles, you know, downtown Los Angeles is what I'm talking about.
All right. So we have posted that interview that we with Dennis Quaid, the actor, did with a local television station in Los Angeles, the NBC affiliate. We posted it on our Today's Issues Facebook page. So if you want to watch the video or the audio we played last half hour, it's pretty fascinating to listen to him talk about. And he said, you know, your life can change in a moment, basically, is what he was saying. All right, you're listening to Today's Issues. Fred, go ahead.
Just one note. We're trying to get a hold of some churches in the area to see what's going on outside of the area, how they're helping. But we do know that there were churches, the buildings, totally destroyed. You know, we talked about businesses and that sort of thing, but imagine a local church that draws from a local area.
Yeah.
It's over. It's over, at least for the foreseeable future. I mean, you got to find somewhere to meet temporarily, and people are going to be displaced and dispersed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, how do you bless them?
Yeah.
We do need to, and I have been, we all need to be praying for that whole situation. I don't know exactly how to pray. You know, I don't know. What does the Bible say when you don't know how to pray? Ed, do you have an answer for that one?
Well, the Bible does say in Romans chapter 8 that the Holy Spirit helps us when we don't know how to pray as we should. This is one of those things where you say, we do know what we should do.
What do you mean?
Well, in terms of churches that are not affected, I'm sure they are helping. I know the Dream Center in Los Angeles our church, the church that you and I attend, Tim, Hope Church here in Tupelo, Mississippi, they are praying about sending a team to help the Dream Center, which is a huge outreach in the Los Angeles area, to help people distribute water and blankets and diapers and some food items. And so I'm sure that the churches in that area that have not been affected by the fires are doing that. They're mobilizing. And you pray for wisdom. Lord, what's the best area? How do we get these supplies to the people who need them? You'll have to work with government agencies if your churches, who government agencies hopefully are setting up areas for.
Is it okay just to say, Lord, I pray for the people of?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know how to pray.
Yeah, I think so.
You understand what I'm saying here?
That's what I've done. Lord, just, you know, help these people find, find what they need. You know, you're talking about immediate survival, okay?
So right.
Finding shelter, food, you know, the things you need to get by over the next several weeks. And then there are, like we've been talking about, the long-term plans, adjustments you have to make. There are going to be people who are going to leave forever that area.
I think a lot of them, probably.
And so where do we go? How do you start all over? You know, if you're not there, if you've moved to Utah or you moved to Texas, you know, are you still going to have to combat with insurance companies and sell your plot? I don't know. Listen,
my wife and I, Allison, we built several houses over our, you know, 4 decades of marriage. Just the issue of building a house requires that you go there on site almost on a daily basis, certainly after the house gets really going, to make sure you're pleased with the work. Everything's been done, you know, like you contracted to do it, and you keep up with the progress. So how is somebody supposed to do that? I'm not talking about the people who are super wealthy, okay? I'm talking about the average person. How's the average person supposed to rebuild a home, especially if it wasn't insured? They don't have the most people. If they do have the money, that's all they have. Maybe their life savings to put. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And then you're supposed to. I don't know. It's just it's a tragic situation, unlike anything that I can remember people going through in this country.
Well, if you and I are having trouble figuring out all the things we would have to, what about the people who have gone through it are having just as much trouble, you know, you talk about the red tape that exists on just rebuilding a house in a place like Los Angeles. It's probably got regulations out the wazoo. Okay. So you're going to have to navigate that.
Listen, ironically, it's like an apocalyptic movie happening in real life Hollywood.
Yeah.
So to speak, you know, the greater Los Angeles area, the entertainment capital of the world.
And it's like Dennis Quaid said, your life, for these people within a week or so, their lives have changed in a way they did not expect. Right.
Forever.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So anyway, that interview with Dennis Quaid that he did there is available on our Today's Issues Facebook page there. All right, Fred, what's your next story?
Well, while all of this is going on the West Coast, back on the East Coast in Washington, D.C., President Joe Biden has just 1 week left on the job. A week from today is Inauguration Day, big day in Washington, D.C. But today, President Joe Biden will give what's being billed as his final foreign policy speech. And in the preview, Jake Sullivan, who is one of his national security advisors, U.S. national security advisors, was interviewed about the speech Biden is giving today. And Sullivan kind of previewed everything by saying the world ought to be thanking that Joe Biden was president over the last 4 years, because the world has been safer because of Joe Biden. In fact, the Associated Press headline leading up to the speech this afternoon from Joe Biden, Biden claims he has been the steady hand the world needed. I think there are people who would dispute that, given what's going on in the world. And has many, and we've talked about it on this program, since Joe Biden became president, look at what has happened around the world, the chaos that's there. The Biden administration blamed for basically caving into Iran and what Iran has done, you know, and its proxies, Hamas, Hezbollah, et cetera, et cetera. China, most people agree China is stronger, much stronger today than it was when Joe Biden became president. North Korea, if anything, the danger level has escalated incredibly since Joe Biden became president. But yet he's going to apparently give this speech today and pat himself on the back and
ask. Is he going to give himself the Presidential Medal of Freedom?
No, I don't. I'm not sure if there's any of those left.
Can he put it around his own neck?
Yes.
Oh, I know. He's been handing those out like candy, huh? George Soros?
George Soros.
George Soros and also Hillary Clinton. They're the most high profile.
George Soros is like a Bond villain. You know, in these James Bond movies over the decades, they always have these like oversized villains. And that's what George Soros is like in terms of what the damage he's done to our country. And for the president of the United States to give him one of these medals is, you know, it's
Presidential Medal of Freedom.
Yeah. Anyway. I think that the Biden administration is going to go down as one of the worst in U.S. history. And I don't know how Biden escapes that. I don't think, you know, like how when someone's president's been kind of unpopular, as the years go by, people's opinion of the president improves. I don't think that's going to happen for Joe Biden.
No.
I don't think anybody's going to be, is going to have any sense of nostalgia for the Joe Biden years, because nothing good happened.
No.
It just was all.
Well, that's the reason they lost, too.
One bitter disappointment after another. One
for me. My expectations were very low to begin with, so I wasn't disappointed.
One wave of darkness after another. We were engulfed by it. No one's going to be going, the good old Biden did. We long for it.
So what do we got? One more week of till Biden is
that's
out.
That's it. I was just looking at the clock. Basically, it's almost 11 o'clock Central Time. Around 11 o'clock Central Time next Monday is now, the big day.
Yes, President Trump will be inaugurated.
Yes.
So let me ask you this. You have you've got 7 more days of Biden and Kamala Harris.
Mm-hmm.
Biden, and I'll insert bless his heart right here. he was it over the weekend where he made the comment about he could have beaten Trump and Kamala Harris could have beaten Trump? Do we have that?
Mm-mm.
Okay. He said, speaking to reporters, does Steve not have that? I thought Steve maybe had that for the next time. Anyway, he said that he could have beaten Kamala Harris. He could have beaten Trump, and Kamala Harris could have beaten Trump, as if the election never even happened.
Yes.
Did you hear that?
Yes, that was bizarre. That was a bizarre moment. I understand.
Even for him.
I understand Joe Biden saying, because he was I don't remember what the subject was, but he was talking about the fact that he stepped down and he did it for party unity. And I can understand him thinking, I could have beaten Trump because he didn't really get the chance, even though I think he was behind in the polls when he did step down, because it was in the
that's
way.
A who that, knows.
That's
a who knows.
But for him to say that Kamala could have, when in fact she had her shot and lost, was a bizarre moment.
Yeah, it's like, excuse me, did you not know they already had that election that you're talking about? She could have won.
Yeah,
that's over, and she didn't win.
Why didn't she?
I don't think Biden would have beaten Trump and had he run, but that's one of those things you'll never know, right? For sure, because we'll never have that election. Anyway, it was kind of bizarre. But we say that every week about something Biden does now, and have been saying that for a few months. So he'll be out.
I just think behind the scenes, the Democratic Party quietly will celebrate when Joe Biden and Kamala Harris lead the stage.
They need a fresh start. So I don't know where they go from here. They're kind of like the California fires. You know, the Democrat Party is in shambles.
Yeah.
I don't know where you go. Oh, you got the okay. Let's play that. This is President Joe Biden commenting on what was in his head.
Do you regret your decision to run for re-election? Do you think that made it easier for your predecessor to now become your successor?
I don't think so. I think I would have beaten Trump, could have beaten Trump, and I think that Kamala could have beaten Trump.
What was he talking about there? The only way
to his head.
The only way that would have possibly even made sense if he had said Kamala could have beaten Trump had she done A, B, and C.
Yeah,
differently.
But he doesn't want to criticize her. No. Publicly. He doesn't.
Yeah, whatever. That's you know, just anyway. That's he'll be out.
Thumbs up to Brent Creeley, our producer, for finding that.
All right, listen. On a positive note, I want to talk about this for a moment here because, you know, what we do here at American Family Association, American Family Radio, is we take action, and we lead people to take action to make a difference on key issues that we care about. Why? Because we think God cares about them.
Yes.
Our mission is whatever. You know, somebody asked me one time, what's your mission statement? I said, well, whatever God's for, we're for, and whatever God's against, we're against.
I like that. Yeah.
Huh? Just right. Simply put, that's our mission statement here at AFA and AFR. But we have been partnering with a ministry that we're very proud of their work. Go ahead, Ed.
Yeah, this is 2025 Preborn AFR, American Family Radio campaign. It starts today. It ends on the 22nd year of January. Folks, you may not know this, but abortion is the leading cause of death in the United States and the world. And as Tim, as you're talking about, in the midst of this kind of awful tragedy, we want people to try to do something about it. So Preborn and American Family Radio are asking you, our listeners, to partner with us to help moms choose life and to help save 4,500 babies this week. 4,500
babies.
How do you
do that? And what is Preborn for those who don't know?
Yeah, Preborn is the direct competition to the abortion industry. It is the largest provider of free ultrasounds in the United States. And by letting a woman see her baby on ultrasound and hear the heartbeat, a baby's chance at life is doubled. That's right. It is doubled. Over the past 18 years, Preborn partner clinics have counseled over 500,000 women who were considering abortion, and more than 300,000 babies' lives have been saved, and more than 80,000 women have also surrendered their lives to Christ. So here's what we're asking you to do. We're asking you to give. I'll give you the number here in just a second. A gift of $28 provides one woman seeking an abortion a free ultrasound, and giving the mom the opportunity to choose life for her baby. So $140 provides five free ultrasound sessions, reaching five women with the message of life. Maybe you could sponsor five ultrasounds. Our goal is to help save 4,500 babies. So please consider a gift of any size. It all makes a difference. Listen, if you can only give $10, that's fine. Along with two other gifts of $10, that's one ultrasound. Here's the number to call this week. Again, this is our Preborn AFR campaign for 2025. The number to call is 877-616-2396. That's 877-616-2396. Or you can donate online if you go to afr.net. You will see the Preborn campaign right there on our website, 877-616-2396. This is the Preborn AFR campaign. It starts today. If you're listening, if you have been listening to American Family Radio today and you listen throughout the week, until the 22nd. This campaign will be going on. So we ask you to please give a gift, again, of $28, provides one woman seeking an abortion a free ultrasound. When they see their baby on that ultrasound and hear the heartbeat, the baby's chance at life is doubled. So please give this week, 877-616-2396.
You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Next story, Fred.
Well, we're talking about the Joe Biden years.
Yeah,
in the early part of
trip down memory lane
administration.
For those of us who still have memories.
That's right. Those of us sitting at this table right now.
That was tacky.
That was tacky. Sorry, Fred. I got correct, Ed.
Those of us sitting at this table right now will remember when, in the midst of COVID, if you expressed an opinion that was opposite that of the Biden administration when it came to, you know, vaccines and
ivermectin.
Say it again, Sam. Remember, and we used to talk with Brent, our producer.
Yeah.
Oh, we've been banned today, you know, because we said this, all that sort of thing. Well, Mark Zuckerberg, who's the CEO of Facebook.
Meta now.
Now call Meta.
The Meta Corporation, META, owns Facebook and Instagram, right?
That is correct.
Yes. Okay.
That is correct.
Everybody knows who Mark Zuckerberg is.
Yes.
By the way, he never ages. I got to give him that.
Yeah.
Right.
Huh? The guy looks like he's still in college. Am I right?
Well, he was 10 years old when he founded it.
So, I don't know how long ago he founded Facebook. 25 years ago? But he doesn't look a...
No.
That doesn't look any different. Anyway, go ahead.
Well, Mark Zuckerberg, in an interview over the weekend with podcaster Joe Rogan, has revealed to the nation that what we expected was true, that the Biden administration, the White House, was on the horn calling Facebook, other social media agencies, basically saying you must take any opposing opinion down. It is misinformation. We will not tolerate this. So I want to hear one play. It's about a minute and 10 seconds or so of this interview between Joe Rogan and Mark Zuckerberg. Cut number 6.
These people from the Biden administration would call up our team and like scream at them and curse. And it's like these documents are, it's all kind of out there. And they're like, and basically it just got to this point where we were like, no, we're not going to take down things that are true. That's ridiculous. They wanted us to take down this meme of Leonardo DiCaprio looking at a TV talking about how 10 years from now or something, you're going to see an ad that says, okay, if you took a COVID vaccine, you're eligible for this kind of payment, like this sort of like class action lawsuit type meme. And they're like, no, you have to take that down. And we just said, no, we're not going to take down humor and satire. We're not going to take down things that are true. And then at some point, I don't know, it flipped a bit. I mean, Biden, when he gave some statement at some point, I don't know if it was a press conference or to some journalist, where he basically was like, these guys are killing people. And I don't know, then like all these different agencies and branches of government basically just like started investigating and coming after our company. It was brutal.
By the way, Facebook was founded in 2004. And then 2012 is when it went public.
But the bottom line in Zuckerberg and his confession there is what we all expected, is that the Biden administration was out to control completely the narrative and to punish anybody who disagreed with them. This is third world country thinking. And now Zuckerberg is confirming what we all kind of knew. And that ought to be scaring people, quite frankly, because that's the thinking of the major political party in this country, is to stop anybody with an opposing point of view on a public policy matter. And by the way, you know, it's kind of been now proven that ivermectin did help some people.
Right.
And there were people who didn't take the shot and did just fine. But the Biden administration was out to totally control the storyline and what people were allowed to hear and read about COVID.
Let me ask you this, guys. This is interesting to hear this from Mark Zuckerberg.
Yes, it is.
And now somebody was saying to me, well, it's a little late,
right?
You know, to talk about this. And now I will say this, about a year ago, he said some similar type things about, basically he was rejecting the total toe the line of the secular progressives.
Mm-hmm.
I've forgotten what his comments were, but I was a little bit surprised. But what he's saying right here, is Biden and the people like the CDC and the what was the name of National Institutes of Health? What was the fella's name that so?
You mean Fauci, Anthony Fauci?
Anthony Fauci, Dr. Fauci. How can I ever forget that? they had the line that they put out, and if you disagreed with it or questioned it at all, you were against science.
Yeah.
Remember by Fauci saying, I am science?
Yes.
I am science. Anyway, he said he was science. So Zuckerberg's coming out now and saying, listen, they were putting the squeeze on us.
Right.
It's interesting to me that he doesn't say, and I agreed with their position on that.
This should be illegal because this is the federal government squashing First Amendment rights,
yes,
by using corporations to do their bidding.
And pressuring them.
Yeah.
Pressuring them. We'll talk more about this when we get back because I want to finish this thought because there's three of the richest men in the world now are basically trending right. We'll be back.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.